we'd like to get this going and wrap it up as quickly as possible. This is Flight Director Milton Windler, and start off with just a brief summary of what went on in the shift, and then take your questions.
Okay, well, it's not a lot I can say. You're already aware that we're continue to be operations normal on the way back. The systems are all very good. When I came on, we had just finished. I guess we haven't had a real press conference in a while, but they were doing the P-23, the navigation sightings. We did the mid-course, worked out very well. That was before I came on. We've spent our time really, I guess the basic thing is letting the crew get rested up. We've only done a couple of the nav sightings, and they're just getting ready to do another set. We did a little communications test with a high-gain antenna. We did a little practice or experiment test objective on the passive thermal control without any attitude control, just in the free mode, and that's basically all we've done. The crew is feeling better, as you probably ascertained from the air-to-ground voice that you've been listening to. They have taken turns sleeping. Lovell went to bed, has been asleep for quite a while now. I didn't copy down the exact times, but 5 or 6 hours, I guess. Borman was up for a while earlier in the night, down here anyway, and then he went to sleep. Anders had been asleep for a while, and he's awake now, and he's actually at the controls. And that's about all I can say. We're coming back. We're committed to a Pacific landing. We decided not to do the mid-course six maneuver. We will do the mid-course seven, even if it's very small. We're already within the corridor. And what this essentially means is that we even without any more mid-course corrections at all, we have satisfactory entry conditions for our spacecraft. And we plan to land it close to 147 hours on 165 west, about 7.5 north, which is essentially the planned end of mission area. The weather's good there. We're all set up now to finish off our nav sightings in the next few hours or several hours here. We did go over the items that have to be covered during the entry with the crew. We went over them with the team, of course, first for some couple of hours, I guess, during this period of quiet time. And then we discussed some of these things with Frank. You probably heard that on the air-to-ground loop. No real major changes there. We reminded him of a few things. As I've indicated to you before, trying to get things essentially covered and put to bed as early as we can, so that we don't have a lot of things that come up on us in the last few hours of the flight. We did a check of the EMS system, the entry monitoring system. All of that turned out very well. You probably heard Frank say that he wasn't worried about the system even before we did the test, but we went ahead and did them anyway, and we don't plan to do any more there. Unless there's something real unusual that comes up, or some of the systems people perhaps today and looking back at the data have any new ideas, but essentially they were happy, at least when I left. And they have some questions, of course, but they're the kind of things that you cover in the debriefing. And I guess that probably covers all the major items.
That MCC-7, I take it, will be with the RCS.
That's affirmative.
About how big a burn?
Right now it's something less than 2 feet a second.
Mm-hmm. That'll involve how much burning time in the RCS?
Oh, I think it's, I'm sorry, it's, I guess it's 5 or 6 seconds, something like that. That's, if you need a more precise number, you can. I have to get it from the PAO people. They can talk back to the control center.
That would be 2 hours before Earth interface, huh?
Entry interface.
Entry interface,
yes.
Yeah. And Just refresh our memories, if you will. What is the diameter of that corridor?
It's plus or minus a degree. And I don't know, everybody asked me what that is in nautical miles, and I don't have any idea. I couldn't even figure it out the other day, about 2 weeks ago when somebody asked me, but we aim for minus 6.5, and it's 1.5 from that. I mean, one, plus or minus one from that is the limit.
It's about 30 miles.
30 miles, he's saying, I don't know. No, the corridor's not 6 degrees. It's inclined at minus 6.5 is a line, with target line we're shooting for. It's 1 degree, plus or minus one, 2 degrees, 30 miles, Doug's saying.
Since we haven't had a lot of briefings since, I forget when, but...
You say again your question?
I say we haven't had a briefing since I forget when.
I remember when I was here.
I was here,
it was
too.
Christmas morning.
A number of times, at least twice, they mentioned in the tape about this haze over the moon, and they asked them if they could see stars twinkle through it. I never did get a response to that in any of the tapes. And two, since today seems to be a somewhat easy day, or maybe they already have they given any description of the backside of the moon? If they have, I'm unaware of it. And also about Earthshine, could they see Copernicus? Could they see anything when they went into Earthshine? They've been remarkably silent on the backside of the moon, and that they were the first goddamn men to ever gaze upon the backside of the moon. Now, I think we ought to have some comment from them as to what they saw or what they didn't see or whatnot on it. Now, see, I don't mean to give you a story, but that's my question.
Okay, let me answer that as best I can. First of all, I'm not an expert on the backside of the moon, period. A man did talk on, I think, at the end of about the first 6 or 7 revs of the lunar operation, and he talked about this, a scientist type that understood what all this meant. The backside of the moon, of course, is not covered by the MISFIN. We had to record their comments in a tape recorder, which we played back. We did find that there was some difficulty. We have two modes of operation on a tape recorder without taking up a lot of your time, but the high bit rate, the low bit rate, it runs at a different speed. And there was somewhat of a problem, apparently, in correlating some of the recording speeds with the playback, you might say, and the voice was garbled. We spent some hours, they played back some of the data from the first LOI, and I listened to part of the voice of that. They essentially were saying that the backside of the moon, sure enough, is just like all of the surveyor and people have been making up maps, the experts have been saying it is. It's pretty dull compared to the front side. And I think they did say that in a voice on the front side, one of the reports to the control center, that the backside was that. They spent quite a bit of time, I thought, describing the moon in general, and I seem to remember some comments like that, and I don't have the transcript, and I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to that. The exact things that they've said, but I get my impression is that they have said words to that effect. Now, we really do not plan to spend a lot of time today in getting a detailed debriefing of that a description of the backside of the moon necessarily. Now, your question about that Earthshine, I haven't spent any time finding out what they said about that. He described that before I came on the other night. Now, your question on Copernicus, I do remember them saying that they could see things in Earthshine much better, apparently, than anybody thought they could. I think you remember I said that they didn't really expect to be able to hardly even see it, things in Earthshine, but they found that they could, and I think they could identify things fairly readily. In Earthshine, however, I understood them to say that they weren't able to take any pictures. If I copied that right on the air to ground loop, and I think that's where I remember that.
Could the PA Could the PAO arrange for this scientist type that talked to him to have a press conference or briefing or report?
When? Day before yesterday. Well, you're giving this man a hard time about things that have been covered in Austin.
Well, Bill, if you can tell me where I'll find them, I'll love to see them. I heard about the moon. I've heard very, very little about the backside, and I've attended all the briefings, and I've heard very little description about the backside of the moon as such. I have never heard what they can see in Earthshine, and I have never heard the astronauts answer the question which put to them twice, could you see stars twinkle through this haze?
Okay, that's on the point about the backside of the moon. I think there are at least a couple of references that I remember, one from Anders, one from Lovell, specifically about the backside of the moon. They would be in the transcript. And as far as getting someone for you to talk with, I think the news center could arrange that. There are a number of people here at the center, and I don't think we'd have any trouble there. Dan, partner?
Could you give us a status report on the S-4B, where it is, and and did they really pass it within that distance that was indicated earlier?
No. It was it's kind of funny, your question, in a way, because I asked the flight dynamics people on several of my shifts earlier about the S-4B before we had the LOI and how close it was going to come. I got a variety of answers as the tracking progressed. One case, it was going to go, I've forgotten now, 1,000 miles and 3,000, and it kind of fluctuated as to what it was going to do. And then after the LOI, I lost interest in the S-4B, but my last recollection was that it, or information was that it was essentially going the way they intended it to. That is, it was passing behind the moon and going on towards the sun, in an orbit around the sun, apparently. But I really haven't kept up with it in what seems like several days now. I don't really know how long it's been, but.
Let's come back up here.
There seems to be some trouble with the biomed harness. What kind of medical data are you getting? Are you getting good data?
We're essentially getting all of it. They traded, if you listen to that. And they talked about sternum EKGs or something like that, and some other kind that starts with an A that sounded like axial, but it really wasn't. And it seemed to make the doctors happy that they were getting all the sufficient data. In fact, I guess when they changed over, it made them, they essentially got just what they were, better than they hoped for. And they were quite happy with their capability to monitor the crewmen. And you're aware we only monitor one at a time, so. We've always had trouble through the extended flights of harness will loosen up a little bit, they move around, etc. So I attribute it to something similar to this. But we're going to wait until the other crewmen wake up before we really try to do too much troubleshooting on that, because they're trying to rest right now. In fact, there's several things we put off doing because we don't want to wake up people that are sleeping underneath the seats by panels, etc.
To what degree will the crew be preparing for re-entry today? What sort of things will they be doing when they're all awake?
Well, they have nothing really that they have to do other than the biggest preparation, you might say, will be these navigation sightings. These are designed to protect them in the event of loss of communication. So all the ones that they get build their vector that was discussed in some of the previous press conferences that'll enable them to get back if for some reason they lose communication, which of course we don't expect to happen, and it gets better all the time as we come back. It's been good, in fact, as we've discussed several times. And I know Frank has already been looking at the checklist because, in fact, while we were thinking about how we would review it on our shift, I believe he actually made the first call and said he questioned us about some item that happened at on 12 hours, which is the first time his entry checklist starts. So they obviously are going to be very sure that they've got everything in order, and I'm sure they'll spend the day reviewing the checklist and going through the things they have to do. But there's nothing official they have to do, formal, I mean, today.
A bit of a frivolous question, but now that you know, you've seen the performance and the demands on the human body there. Can you say now whether it's possible for a woman to do that sort of thing?
I don't have any idea. I suppose so. They do everything else.
I got here a little late, and I apologize if I'm asking something you've covered, but do you have the splashdown time and the time for television today?
I didn't copy the television time down. I'm sure it's as advertised, and the splash is essentially as advertised. It's 147 hours, give or take a few minutes, but essentially at that time. Well, the entry interface is 147. Then it's be a few minutes after that.
Is that all?
I thought we were given this morning that the entry interface was going to be 146.40 or something like that, and the splashdown would be 147. Are you sure about the...
Well, like I say, well, first of all, the times you have now are going to vary by some few minutes anyway. And the number actually was, I rounded it off, it was in the late 146s. I was thinking it was 146.50 some odd, though. Did you say 40 some?
Can we get a good update on that over at PAO later?
Yes, yeah. I think we've got a figure on that.
You realize they continue to build a vector on towards that. And that last little mid-course will have some small effect on that time. Shouldn't have too much on it by then.
How good does their celestial navigation seem to be in comparison with Earth pointing?
I guess I'm not really sure of your question. Let me tell you what I know and see if that tells you what you're getting at. Of course the tracking from the ground is doing quite well. Somewhat better than expected, although we expected it to be very good, obviously. The performance of the crew, I'd have to say, with the onboard navigation is going extremely well. There were people that thought that they would have a more difficult time than they've had. They've been able to do their sightings, and as we discussed previously, you're aware under some kind of difficult conditions as far as identifying the stars and so forth with the hazy windows, etc. So they have done very well at doing their onboard sightings and essentially made us feel quite good about their capability to navigate, you might say, on their own. Does that answer your question? That's really about all I know.
I was just after a comparison of the onboard and Earth.
Okay, over here.
What was this? Sometime during the night, something about an antenna. I think Anders was awake at the time, and it went past and hit the stops. I'm not quite sure of all that.
That was the high gain antenna test. It has a mode of operation where it automatically tracks the signal, and it as it gets around to what we call the scan limits, it first passes a limit which is the RF limit, which is the point at which it starts getting scatter and the skin blocks it, and then it gets into a mechanical stop. And in the automatic mode, which we had not used up to this time, this auto reacquisition, we call it, the antenna, once it senses that it's gone past this RF limit, is supposed to go over to a preset position on the controls, which is calculated to be the point at which it will kind of appear on the spacecraft horizon, as it were. And as the spacecraft continues to roll around in this passive thermal control attitude, it will pick up the signal. And what it was apparently doing, although there's some discussion about exactly what happened, but we'll probably have to reconstruct all that after we get a chance to talk to Bill and have a look at exactly all the data. It was losing the signal, and it was It would go to the wide beam, which allows it to see a signal at a wider angle, and the signal from the Earth is quite strong, the ground station signal, and it was getting enough of a signal that it actually was able to track it, even though theoretically anyway the spacecraft should have been blocking it. So it actually kind of, I think he referred to it as having X-ray eyes or something, didn't he say that? And that's what he was referring to, the fact that it could see, essentially it could see through the spacecraft. It was kind of interesting that we were able to hold our lock. The communication got a little bit ragged as far as the voice and some of the data, but we did hold a signal through this period.
The clock over there says RRT. Is that the same as EI, entry interface?
Yes, that's a reference time, which is that.
It's same
for,
same
for all
thing.
Practical purposes, yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.